This is Book Public from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. On this episode, I talked to Sasha Bonet about her debut memoir, The Water Bearers. The Water Bearers is an intergenerational memoir. Sasha Bonet explores the complexities of the legacies of Black motherhood in America and weaves her family's personal history with the broader cultural narratives of Black women. This is not a simple story. At a certain point, even in childhood, we learn quickly that the lives of our mothers and grandmothers were anything but simple. In her own experience, Bonet traces the story of her grandmother Betty Jean on a Louisiana plantation, and then her mother's story, Connie, in 1990s Houston, and then finally to herself raising her own daughter. Bonet examines and offers a compelling argument for how each generation adapted and strived for more in this world, while also shouldering the weight of historical trauma rooted in slavery. The author also explores the complexities of our familial relationships. Love coexists with pain and strife. And what of the title and the imagery and metaphor of water bearers? Bonet uses this compelling and apt metaphor of a river and its tributaries to map out the story of her family and also of the many other Black women she feels are water bearers for new generations. Through her book, Water Bearers, Bonet herself seeks to disrupt the cycle of trauma and offers this memoir as an act of confronting pain and seeking healing. I spoke to Sasha Bonet about her memoir, Water Bearers. Sasha, the title of the book, it's enigmatic. It has like this inherent complexity, also this bearing, this weight. Can you tell us about your book? But by way of this title, I feel like there are just some broad implications that we'll get to. But what do you say when people ask you, wow, Water Bearers, what is this about?
Yeah, I think that the title really speaks to a kind of responsibility, endurance, and role that the women in this book play. It's really all about these women who have been given this responsibility to care for their families and ultimately for the nation in a way that is burdensome, but also a duty that they carry with a kind of pride and resilience. And so I thought the title, and it's a title that can be applied to, it's something I think that we recognize internationally as a job, a role for women, the water bearers. So in that way, it's also a signal to the concept of the book being largely about women.
Yeah, because it's not just about genealogy. It's not just about your mother, your grandmother. It really is about women, mothers, but women more broadly. It does evoke this image that women must carry the weight of things, and that also that it's an inheritance. Tell me about this idea, about the things that the body holds, and even how it's sort of like this legacy that manifests intergenerationally.
Yes, that's a beautiful question. The water bearers also, of course, refers to the water of the womb, this protective place that we all come from. And it's such a special little incubator because even when the mother is unwell or the mother doesn't have access to a lot of nutrients, the baby still receives what it needs through the womb, even if the mother is sacrificing everything to build this human. And so the water of the womb is very much a part of the title as well. What I love about the title is that it is kind of all-encompassing. It just feels as if it speaks to all the different ways that I'm speaking about these women, because there are women in the book who aren't mothers. But yes, it's about the ways that we carry certain things in our bodies. And if it's not tended to in this lifetime, we pass it on to our children. And in many ways, I have inherited the histories and the stories of these women. And I have been given the privilege of sharing these stories in the book, stories of my mother, stories of my grandmother, and the women who came before her. who weren't necessarily able to tell their stories, because there is a lot of privilege, and it is a gift to be able to be the storyteller of the family. But so much of these women's experiences in my family and more broadly are never told, because they take it with them to their graves, and they don't complain. They work hard, and they don't want to be seen as victims. That's not a part of the narrative. And so this inheritance that I've received is sitting down with all of these stories, kind of parsing through them, dissecting them, trying to understand what they mean, and also just bearing witness to their lives.
I love this idea about including women, even women who are not mothers, in that strictest sense of that idea. And water is such an interesting symbol. I mean, it's life-giving. It's something that energizes us. It's a force that can be very positive, but it can also be a very negative force. It can be something very dangerous, or it can be something of an obstacle. And that this idea about water, this very multifaceted thing about water in your book, is so interesting to me. And you mentioned your mother and your grandmother, and there is so much to say about Betty Jean and Connie, not just about the familial relationship, but also about the ways in which their legacy around this idea of Black American women, maybe more broadly, is illustrated on these pages where you share so much about them. Can you talk about your grandmother?
Yes, that's a big one, because she has, my grandmother's Betty Jean, and I open the book with her story. And she's really the kind of genesis of why I needed to try to understand what was happening with the women in my family, and more broadly, the women of America. She was such an interesting figure to me. I didn't understand her. I had a deep respect for her, as we all did. She was the matriarch of our family, but we all knew very little of her. We knew that she had migrated to Texas from Louisiana. We knew that she had grown up on a cotton plantation as a tenant farmer. But beyond that, we didn't really know anything about her personally, her personal life, friends. Her interiority. It was more, she was the matriarch. You didn't ask her questions, but she was this kind of fierce, quiet figure who really kind of set her own terms for what it meant to be a woman and to be a mother. So the idea is, she's left this plantation and she's moved to Houston, which is this urban environment, and she didn't really know how to exist in that type of setting. She's from the country, you know. Everyone went to the same school, and everyone had the same kind of class status. So in Houston, it's bustling. There are people from all over the world. And I think she had to determine who she was. And that meant kind of exploring. That meant deciding the type of life she wanted to have. But she had been forced to drop out of school after her grandmother died, who raised her, to take care of her grandfather and her brother, and also to be like the woman of the house on the plantation. And she resented that, because she loved school. She didn't get to graduate from high school. And so once she did migrate to Houston, she decided that she was not going to dedicate her life to men any longer. But she still wanted to have a family. So she had all of these children. She had 11 children with 9 different men, and she never married any of them intentionally. And she really kind of took the children as her own, in a kind of ownership way, like she would raise them by herself. I couldn't understand that, because my mother raised me in such a different way. So once I became an adult, I became a mother myself. I started to ask her questions, which was considered disrespectful, where I'm from, to ask the matriarch to dig into their past, because you don't know what may be buried there that might be harmful for them to uncover. So there is a lot of grace and love in the idea of not asking. But I think there's also love in asking. And I think she was really happy that someone asked her about her story, and she shared it with me. And that's how I opened the book.
There's something that you said about the interiority. I love this idea because there is an interiority in even in women who don't want to share their story or feel like perhaps they don't have the words to share their story or the space to share it or the audience to share it. I recently interviewed Jill Bielowski about her memoir about her mother. It's called The End is the Beginning. And she starts the book with the death of her mother. And she has this reverse chronology and ends with the birth of her mother. And it's such an interesting way to really get to understand and keep turning the pages because we want to just know more and more about her. Because our mothers and our grandmothers do have interior lives that are important. But I hear what you're saying. I think the role of the storyteller of the family can be a double-edged sword. It can be burdensome sometimes. As you say, that sometimes you don't ask the questions just out of a sense of respect and grace, giving that over to somebody. But at the same time, in your role as the storyteller, there are questions to keep asking. There is curiosity. There is a story that you want to share. So in writing this book, how did that manifest for you? Did you run into those obstacles? Or do you fear that that will emerge down the road?
Which obstacles exactly?
The idea that, you know, that we can brush up against resistance to sharing the lives of others, to talking about the lives of others.
Yes. I think my grandmother, because she's our matriarch, with her giving me the permission to tell her story, it allowed for the other women in my family, my mother, my aunts, my cousins, to open up and contribute as well. So it's almost as if she gave the nod, the go-ahead to everyone just by sharing with me. It gives me, it provides me with a kind of authority and that I couldn't have had without her blessing. And it's not like people called and asked her, hey, is this okay? It's just it kind of under a collective understanding. I still don't think that that makes it easy for people to read about themselves. I think for my mother, she's still, some days she's super excited about the book. Some days she's a little bit confused. Some days she's not happy. So I think it can be really challenging. I think it's one thing to sit down with a writer and tell them your story. It's another thing to read how they put it together. And I think it can be challenging when you want to be seen, but you're still very guarded. And when you've grown up in the type of community that I've grown up in, which is that in the Black American experience, secrecy was important to survival. Discretion is important to survive. And so in that way, this is pushing up against one of the core elements of the culture and challenging that. But there is a way that I think stories can really liberate us, make us feel less alone, help us to understand how to disentangle some of the beauty of this legacy from the violence that shaped this legacy and this history. So I do think that it's not easy. It's also sometimes I walk into the room and my family says, shh, she's coming in. The writer's as if they can't speak openly around me anymore, you know, like everything's going to get turned into a book, which is funny. But I think ultimately everyone was quite happy to be able to share.
And to trust, right, that you're going to tell the most honest story that you can, because it is a complicated story. I mean, obviously, The Water Bearers, this is a work of nonfiction. It is a true story, but it offers us something too about the imagined life too, because you really explore and interrogate the lives of other women who are not in your family that you could not directly observe except through books, through literature, through the news, through other means, through other media. I wonder if you can talk about some of these women that you discuss in your book.
Yes, I love the imagined part. I love piecing together, taking one story, comparing it to another story, and then building a bridge between them over the gaps. I think that to me feels more in rhythm with my style of writing than a traditional nonfiction. So for example, with the funk musician Bette Davis, who I write about as a real kind of cultural influence that unfortunately died in a kind of destitution, despite the impacts that she's had on the music industry. People like Beyonce, Madonna, Prince, you know, she really changed so much of the music culture, but ended up not really being able to reap the benefits as the first one to kind of take this step in this direction. So it was really challenging to find information about her because of that. So I had to have different interviews with different people who knew her and piece together stories from other people, which is also what I had to do with my family. That's the thing about these women that I'm writing about. There's a way that their lives have been deemed not worthy of witness. So I speak about another Bette Davis, who was an enslaved woman for the first president of the United States, George Washington. And she was a seamstress for the Washington family while her whole life, but also while he was president. And there was really no record of her until her daughter ran away from the executive residence, which at the time was in Philadelphia. And I would never know anything about her mother, who was a seamstress, who lived as a kind of also as a comfort woman to men who were visiting the Washington estate. You know, she would be like lent out to these men to make them feel comfortable being here in our nation. She was an offering from our nation's first president. And so, of course, she's not in the archive because it's not exactly her positionality was essential, but it wasn't how the nation wanted itself to be represented formally. So her life wasn't recorded. But when her daughter ran away from George Washington, he pursued her. And in that pursuit, there was documentation. And that documentation allowed for me to know that her mother even existed. So these are the type of ways that I would need to build. I had to build the narrative of who Bette Davis was based off of these documents and piecing them together. So in that way, the whole book is kind of a collage in this way. These lives are collaged because there's never a straightforward record. Some of the women in the book I had to get from the journals of the headmistress of the house, from the master's wife, who these relationships are so intimate, you know, the woman, the enslaved woman who's caring for the woman who is over the plantation with her husband, they are side by side all day. So they have this really kind of this intimacy. And I really wanted to draw that out too, is how intimate the Black and white experience is in America, how we are so much more similar than we are different, and how the nation was really kind of stitched together through these intimate dynamics. You know, these women were raising the children of the slavers. You know, these women were breastfeeding their children. It's such an intimate familial engagement. And so these women of the past helped me to put it together. Bette Davis's, Camille Billups, who is an artist who chose not to be a mother and gave her daughter up so that she could pursue life as an artist. I write about Fred Hampton's mother, Iberia Hampton, who is also from Louisiana and migrated to Chicago. And how these, if you look behind into the green room, or if you look backstage, you see these women, essentially. They're not on the main stage of this country's history, but if you peek just behind whoever is on the center stage, there's going to be a Black woman there. There's always been a Black woman there. But that is so detached from the perception of the United States.
There's so much in this book about, You're a consummate researcher, obviously, and such a thorough researcher, and it comes through so beautifully here. The role of these women, these historical figures, the cultural history of our past, your observations of maybe more contemporary or modern women through the media, for example, or Black cultural icons, all of that is of a piece of somehow your own journey, your own identity. And the other thing that I appreciate too is, again, the multidimensionality that you give over to these women who are relegated to the background, silent, invisible. We don't know their names. We don't know their story. And you knock all of that down and bring the name to the fore. They're visible to us. We get to know their, as you said, their interiority and their story. And it's just something quite amazing. But not everybody understands this sort of way that we can say that we were carried by these other women who are not in our family. It can become a very difficult thing to explain.
Ultimately, we are all here because someone survived. There is this part that at towards the end of the book where I talk about reading this pregnancy book.
Yes.
When I was pregnant, where it said it, and I recognized that it said, your grandmother. So essentially, when your grandmother's pregnant with your mother gets all the eggs that she's ever going to have while she's in your utero. So you never get more eggs as you leave the womb. All the egg, you're born with all the eggs you're ever going to have. So in that way, these eggs are cultivated within your grandmother's body. They're made within the womb of your grandmother. And when I read that, it was so striking to me because I was like, wait, we're connected not just, you know, through genes, but actually a part of me was created inside of my grandmother's body. And when I think about what all she had been through, I was like, oh, a part of me was there, because of course, everything we experience impacts every part, every cell in our body. So in that way, we're all here because someone survived, you know? And so I'm grateful for that. And hopefully that book can kind of communicate just how interconnected we really all are. It's not just about genes, or it's also just actually we're made up of the same fibers. And so I think that was really eye-opening for me to understand what we carry with us. And in that way, these women are kind of pushing us forward.
That is so profound and so beautiful. Sasha Bonet, thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure.
Sasha Bonet is the author of Water Bearers. Sasha Bonet is a writer, cultural critic, and professor of creative writing at Columbia University and Barnard College. This has been Book Public from Texas Public Radio. Jacob Rosati composed our theme music. Dan Katz is Texas Public Radio's news director. I'm Yvette Benavides.